20, in the description given of Lord Brahma's creations, the Visaga creations, the secondary creations, practically speaking, the last creation that was described, which was in human form, who was in human form, was the creation of Manu, Swayambhuva Manu. So therefore, in the beginning of the next chapter, Vidura, in the first verse, asked about Swayambhuva Manu. He said, the line of Swayambhuva Manu was most esteemed. O worshipful sage, I beg you, give me an account of this race whose progeny multiplied through sexual intercourse. The two great sons of Swayambhuva Manu, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, ruled the world consisting of seven islands, just according to religious principles. O holy Brahmanas, O sinless one, you have spoken of his daughter, known by the name of Devahuti, as the wife of the sage Kardama, the lord of created beings. How many offsprings did that great yogi beget through the princess, who was endowed with eightfold perfections in the yoga principles? Pray tell me this, for I am eager to hear it. O holy sage, tell me how the worshipful Ruchi and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generated children after securing as their wives the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. So that those five verses are the basic questions that Vidura asked after hearing about Swayambhuva Manu. So there are a few points that can be described, and we'll read some of the elements of Prabhupada's purport. The first thing was that he was asking about the progeny, or the children, or the successive generation of children from Swayambhuva Manu. Now, why would he ask about that? So is it that we're interested in just children and grandchildren and who came from who, family lineage? No. One time one man came to, when Prabhupada was staying in his house, and he wanted to introduce his family members. So he said, this is my wife. And he brought his wife in. Then he went out. And this is my first child. So first son was a man already. And here is my second son, and here is my third son. And he went out, and here is my daughter. And then he went out, and here is my first son's son, and here is my second son's daughter, and here are two of these and one of this, and here is this, and here is that. And then the man left, and Prabhupada said, here is my sex life. That's all he was saying. So there is no interest in this actually for the devotees. But why did Vidura ask? And Prabhupada explains this in his purport, the purport to the first verse, by saying that Swayambhuva Manu was, or Vidura was interested in the progeny of Swayambhuva Manu because in that dynasty, good kings, good devotee kings appeared who protected their subjects very carefully with spiritual knowledge. Very interesting. That the king's duty is to protect the subjects, because he knows that there is a purpose in their life. Their purpose in their life is to make spiritual advancement. Whatever else they gain in this world will be stolen by time, and ultimately one only gains misery in this world. But that which we gain that is eternal, tarappa dhruvam artadam, komaram acharat pragyo, dharman bhagavataniha, dulabam manushyajana. Because human life is so rare. Because it affords one the opportunity to make spiritual progress and get something positively and eternal out of life. So the kings knew this. And the followers, or the children, the good devotee kings, born of Swayambhuva Manu, They were very careful to protect their subjects with spiritual knowledge. Because based on spiritual knowledge, one decides, discerns what is proper and what is improper to do. So knowledge is useful when it governs our activities. So that, having that knowledge, is protection. If we use it and govern our activities and see. Shastra Chakshush, see through the eyes of the transcendental knowledge from the Shastra. So there were, as we have heard in the succeeding verses, that Swayambhu Vimanu had four children, two boys and two girls. The two girls were Devahuti and Akuti. And Devahuti married Kardama Muni and Akuti married Ruchi. They were both Prajapatis. Kardama Muni was born from the shadow of Brahma. And Devahuti was the daughter of Swayambhu Vimanu, the son of Brahma. And then, especially Devahuti and Daksha. Daksha means expert. That is the meaning, because he was expert in creating the different species of life so that the universe could be populated. And Daksha was, we'll hear about Daksha, had it as his wife. Oh, excuse me, it was not Devahuti as the wife, but Prasuti. Prasuti, and so Daksha had Prasuti as his wife. Yeah. And the two sons of Swayambhu Vimanu were Uttanapad, who was the father of Dhruva Maharaj, and so much of the third and fourth canto, or all of it basically, is the kings who came from Uttanapad. And then when Uttanapad's dynasty ended, the fifth canto will begin with Priyavrata, who was elder but a renunciant. He didn't want to get involved in household life, so he was just meditating. But when Uttanapad's dynasty ended, Swayambhu Vimanu, along with Brahma, and ultimately along with Narada Muni, they all encouraged Priyavrata to take to ruling, and he ruled very well. He was performing austerities somewhere. So the fifth canto will describe some of the progeny of coming from the dynasty, coming from Priyavrata, who was coming from Swayambhu Vimanu. So these kings were so wonderful, and they governed according to religious principles. So therefore, because they were so powerful, and because they were so religious, therefore Vidura wished to hear about them, and he's inquiring. By hearing the history of their activities, Prabhupada explains, therefore, one becomes more enlightened. So this is good for us too. We hear about this and we become enlightened. The word enlightened is interesting. What is the opposite of enlightened? You could say endarkened. It's light and dark. So light always means knowledge. Because by light we can see things as they are. In darkness we cannot see. We mistake one thing for another. So ignorance or illusion is compared to darkness, and light is compared to knowledge. So Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. So to get rid of the darkness, the Andhakar, what is required is the light of knowledge. The two great sons of Swayambhu Vimanu, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, ruled the world, consisting of seven islands, just according to religious principles. In Prabhupada's purport, he makes a correlation between the seven islands of and the seven different continents of this world. And then Vidura says to Maitreya, O holy Brahman, O sinless one, you have spoken of his daughter, known by the name of Devahuti, as the wife of the sage Kardama, the lord of all created beings. So this took place in the 12th chapter of this canto, where Maitreya was, he mentioned Devahuti as being the wife of Kardama, who was born of the shadow of Brahma. So he continues to ask, how many offspring did that great yogi beget through the princess, who was endowed with eightfold perfections in the yoga principles? Oh, pray tell me this, for I am eager to hear of it. So Devahuti was the beloved daughter of Manu. Formerly, Prabhupada explains in the purport, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children. Otherwise, they strictly observed the rules and regulations of celibacy. So they would perfect their consciousness, because according to one's consciousness, the consciousness of the male and female at the time of the conception of the child will, a soul who has a similar consciousness will be attracted into the womb of the woman. So the sages would be very careful about conceiving children, and their consciousnesses and the consciousness of the wife would be in a very submissive and pure consciousness, and the husband would be in a very pure consciousness, trying to conceive wonderful children. And the result would be that a soul who is very pure by nature would be attracted to the womb, and therefore that child would take its birth who would be of a similar holy nature to the parents. So formerly, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children. Otherwise, they strictly observed the rules and regulations of celibacy. Brahmacharya, following the rules and regulations of celibacy, is required for perfection of self-realization and mystic power. So one has to control one's senses. But in Kali Yuga, it is so difficult, because no one has this concept when they're brought up. And even if they have this concept when they're brought up, very often they throw it away, because the lure of the senses on one hand is so strong, and on the other hand, the objects of the senses are shamelessly paraded in front of the young boys and the young girls, and the education and the culture, the Western culture, thinks that makes one fall victim to sex life at the earliest of ages through the media of the television and the movies and the music and things like that, and the different styles. So the poor children lose, the impressions get in their mind when they're very young and flexible, and therefore they're stuck with these bad sanskaras or impressions for the rest of their lives. It's so difficult for them. So how glorious was the Vedic culture that started off with the principle that life has a purpose, an eternal purpose. And in today's society, what do people think is the purpose of life? They don't think about things like that. Just get wealthy, enjoy your senses, get power or something. So everything becomes ruined, and it's very sad. There is no recommendation in the Vedic scriptures that one can go on and on enjoying material sense gratification at one's whims, as one likes, and at the same time become a great meditator by paying a rascal some money. So Prabhupada in this section, he's going to speak about what the process of yoga is, because Kodama Muni was a perfect and powerful yogi. And what is commonly thought of yoga today, or self-realization today, or some new age way to find oneself, there is never, practically speaking, any restriction on sense gratification. And people here, especially Prabhupada he speaks against this, this not directly but indirectly, but against the TM, because in those days TM was popular, and you bought a mantra, before, it started off probably like $25 in the 60s, then inflation hit, and I don't know what the charge for the mantra is now. Does anyone know? Hundreds of dollars, I'm sure. And what do you do? You sit and meditate on this mantra, and you do for 15 minutes, and that's it. And very quickly you find out that you are one with God. That's the promise, you are God. You don't have to restrict any sense gratification. You can do whatever you want. You can eat anything. You can eat flesh, rotting flesh. You don't have to restrict your senses in any way. But just pay your money and get this mantra, and you become or find out that you are God. So Prabhupada would speak very strongly against this. So in the Vedic, there is no recommendation in the Vedic scriptures that one can go on enjoying material sense gratification at one's whim, as one likes, and at the same time becomes a great meditator by paying a rascal some money. So he's asking, because these great sages, they are telling the actual way to make progress in spiritual life. Sadhu means one who cuts. So these sadhus, Prabhupada and the great sages, they were not frivolous personalities. They were very heavy about what the process was. Whether one could follow it strictly or one might not be able to follow it strictly, but yet the process was not bent by Prabhupada and changed. As if, well, I'm having a hard time following the principles, and therefore if I change the spiritual message, it changes the rules, and now there are no rules, and therefore I have an easy time following because there's no rules to follow, and therefore I'll make progress. No, it doesn't work like that, because the scriptures give the rules, and the spiritual master's duty is to follow Shastra. So now, you know, Prabhupada actually, he mentions it more directly in, about bogus yogis in the next verse. He says, we do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system, in which it is stated that simply by meditating 15 minutes daily, one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. No, this yoga process is actually so difficult to follow. So difficult, so painstaking. This Ashtanga Yoga, Patanjali Yoga. So difficult to follow that practically speaking, it takes so long that practically speaking, that no one can follow it to perfection in Kali Yuga. So this will give us an idea. In text 6, Maitreya Muni replied to Vidura's question. Vidura was asking, what about Kadama Muni and what progeny did he produce with Devahuti, who was also a powerful yogini? So Maitreya Muni began to reply, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the world, the worshipful Kardama Muni practiced penance on the bank of the river Saraswati for a period of 10,000 years. Not for 15 minutes a day and the rest of the day just enjoyed himself, but heavy practices of yogic penances and the practice of Ashtanga Yoga for 10,000 years. And after that time, as we'll hear, he reached perfection. Here's Prabhupada's purport. It is understood herein that Kadama Muni meditated in yoga for 10,000 years before attaining perfection. Saraswatyam tapastepe. He practiced austerity. Tap means heat or austerity. He practiced austerity for thousands of years, sahasranam samadasha, for 10,000 years. Similarly, we have information that Valmiki Muni also practiced yoga meditation for 60,000 years before attaining perfection. Therefore, yoga practice can be successfully performed by persons who have very long duration of life, such as 100,000 years. In that way, it is possible to have perfection in yoga. Otherwise, there is no possibility of attaining the real perfection. Following the regulations, controlling the senses, and practicing the different sitting postures are merely the preliminary practices. And then Prabhupada makes that statement. We do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system in which it is stated that simply by meditating 15 minutes daily, one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. This age, Kali Yuga, is the age of bluffing and quarrel. Actually, there is no possibility of attaining yogic perfection by such paltry proposals. Practically nothing happens. One may become a little more peaceful, or one may harmonize this or that, but one doesn't actually practice yoga. The Vedic literature, for emphasis, clearly states three times, nasteva, 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 that in this age of Kali, kalo nasteva, 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 there is no alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative than Harinam, chanting the holy name of the Lord. But the chanting must be done without offense. And then progress comes. So Kardama Muni practiced penance, austerity, practiced yoga for 10,000 years on the bank of the Saraswati. During that period of penance, the sage Kardama, by worshipping through devotional service in trance, samadhi yuktena, he connected in samadhi with the Lord. He propitiated the personality of Godhead, who is the quick bestower of all blessings upon those who flee to him for perfection. So, this is the goal of yoga. To samadhi, tata samadhi yuktena, kriya yogena kardama. So he achieved the perfection of samadhi, which is the goal of yoga, means that he fully focused his consciousness upon the Supreme Lord. This is what yoga is. This is the goal of yoga. Krishna explains this in the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham madgitain antaratmanam sadavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamo mataha. That one who, the topmost yogi, or the yogi who has reached the conclusion of yoga, he focuses his consciousness on me and worships me with great faith and devotion. So that is the, in Kali Yuga, the direct method is chanting the holy name of Krishna, because the goal, again, is to focus one's mind on Krishna. So if one's going to practice yoga and after so many thousands and thousands of years comes to the conclusion that I should focus my mind on Krishna with that ability, to focus his mind on Krishna, the simpler method is just to chant Krishna's names continuously. Doshanad he rajan, kaler doshanad he rajan, astiyeko mahatguna, kirtanad eva Krishna siya mukta sangha parambaraji. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The significance of meditation is described here. So he just wasn't practicing the asanas and the yam niyam, the rules and regulations. Kardama Muni practiced mystic yoga meditation for 10,000 years just to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now we're going to read some a little later from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And we'll hear how there are so many people practicing yoga, but the goal is to surrender to Krishna. This is the goal of yoga. Krishna explains that right in the Bhagavad Gita. Sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Surrender to me. So he practiced meditation for 10,000 years just to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Therefore, whether one practices yoga or speculates and does research to find God, that's either jnana or practicing yoga, one's efforts must be mixed with the process of devotion. Without devotion, nothing can be perfect. The target of perfection and realization is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said The one who constantly engages in Krishna consciousness is the topmost yogi. The personality of Godhead Hari also fulfills the desires of his surrendered devotee. One has to surrender unto the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead Hari or Krishna in order to achieve real success. Every other success is temporary. Devotional service or engagement in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and all other methods, although recommended, are indirect. In this age of Kali, the direct method is especially more feasible than the indirect. Why? Because in Kali Yuga, people are short-lived, their intelligence is poor, and they are poverty-stricken and embarrassed by so many miserable disturbances. So it is so difficult to do anything in Kali Yuga. What to speak of something that's so difficult it takes 10,000 years of the most austere practices to succeed in. So therefore Mahaprabhu, bringing the Yuga Dharma, Harinama Sankirtana, Haridama Harinama Sankirtana. So this is Kali Yuga. People, they live short, always in anxiety. People's intelligence is poor. Why? Because the intelligence is strengthened by austerity. And the last thing people want is austerity. Everyone's intelligence is weak and minds become so strong and unbridled by unlimited sense enjoyment. And people are poverty stricken. Always in debt, everyone has to work so hard, work, go further into debt, and embarrassed by so many material disturbances. The mind is always disturbed by disease, by this problem, that problem, family problems, that childhood problems, abuse problems, this, that. And therefore, because of all these miserable disturbances and difficulties, Lord Chaitanya has given us the greatest boon. In this age, one simply has to chant the holy name of God to attain perfection in spiritual life. And then Prabhupada says, but unfortunately, people in this age, especially persons who are of a demoniac nature, they want to be cheated. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead sends great cheaters who mislead them in the name of yoga and render their lives useless and doomed. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is clearly stated in the 16th chapter, verse 17, that rascals of self-made authority, that means everyone in Kali Yuga is their own authority, and you can establish any path, you can invent a new method by which very quickly you can, 15 minutes a day, or just do this, or just do that, you can find out that you are God. Get rid of your problems. What are some of the things they... What are the contemporary things they call other than earwax cleaning? What are the things that they do? What do they call it again? What are the buzzwords they use? Trauma relief. What do they do? What do they say?
Childhood regression.
Yes, child past life regression, childhood regression.
Aura readings.
Huh? Aura readings.
No, he's just telling you that you're up.
Only $8,000. And what happens when you...
6-day intensive.
6-day intensive for only $8,000. Anyway, this is times of inflation. And you can bet that people will be there. Somewhere I saw something that there was a... This man, they go to these places, they put you up in hotels and they charge you for a weekend sometimes $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 so you can go and increase your psychic powers and things like that. That's such incredible cheating. And as Prabhupada said, he says, I do not know how people can believe all this. Krishna empowers cheaters because the people want this. to be misled in the name of yoga and render their lives useless and doomed. So in the 16th chapter, the Divine and Demonic Nature, verse 17, it describes the rascals of self-made authority. I have invented a new method. Being puffed up by illegally collected money, perform yoga or sacrifices without following the authoritative books. Whimsical. But they're very good at squeezing money out of people. They are very proud of the money they have plundered from innocent persons who want to be cheated. So after his 10,000 years, and this is in Satyuga, the age of the golden age where people live for a long time. Then in Satyuga, the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, being pleased, showed himself to that Kardama Muni and displayed his transcendental form, which can be understood only through the Vedas. So he showed the Lord his form. The Lord showed Kardama Muni his transcendental form. So Kardama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is free from material contamination. Even though he has a form, it has nothing to do with matter. In his eternal form, effulgent like the sun, wearing a garland of white lotuses and water lilies, the Lord was clad in spotless yellow silk, and his lotus face was fringed with slick dark locks of curly hair, adorned with a crown and earrings. He held his characteristic conch, disc, and mace in three of his hands, and a white lily in the fourth. He glanced about in a happy, smiling mood, whose sight captivates the hearts of all devotees. A golden streak on his chest, a Shrivats, that's Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, the famous Kostuba gem, suspended from his neck, he stood in the air with his lotus feet placed on the shoulders of Garuda. So this is the goal of yoga. The consciousness becomes focused on Krishna. And Krishna is so, he captivates the consciousness. But what one has to go through to see the Lord in this way, that the Lord, ultimately the Lord has to be pleased. And by the desire of the devotee and the pleasure and the mercy, pleasure and mercy of the Lord, he reveals himself to the devotee. But it is not a cheap or easy process. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of God in him person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. So on one hand there was his desire, on the other hand there was the Lord's causeless mercy. His desire attracted the causeless mercy of the Lord. So Kardama Muni fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. So tomorrow, or rather on Wednesday, we'll hear the prayers of Kardama Muni. Now we'll read some of the purport. Actually, this purport, Prabhupada takes the entire purport to explain how difficult yoga is to practice. He gets into some personal, some details, and he mentions the Patanjali Sutra. Patanjali is an incarnation of Shesh, Ananta Shesh. And he wrote books on grammar, Sanskrit grammar, and Ayurveda, and also on the practice of yoga, and they are authoritative. So he taught how to practice this Ashtanga yoga, which is so difficult. And again, ultimately the goal is samadhi. And in samadhi, one can see the transcendental Lord. And Prabhupada explains that yogis who manufacture their own way, not consulting the authorities, are simply ludicrous. They are foolish. According to Patanjali, when one is fixed in constant realization of the Supreme Form of the Lord, one has attained the perfectional stage as attained by Kadama Muni. So then one practices the preliminary stages, and then after 10,000 years or so, one gets the conclusion. So I would like to read some from the Yoga Sutras, just so we get an idea of what yoga actually is. Now, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras are, they're divided into four chapters. The first chapter is about sadhana. The second chapter is about samadhi. I think that's right. Yeah, samadhi. Then the third chapter is vibhuti, or when you gain powers or opulences. And the final chapter is kaivalya, or becoming one with the Lord in desire. When that which separates us from Krishna is removed. So those are the different padas or chapters. Now we're going to read some of this. Here's in sadhana. Burning zeal in practice, self-study, svadhyaya, and the study of scriptures, and surrender to Ishwara, to the Lord, are the acts of yoga. Ultimately, it ends in surrender. That means offering sharanagati means the return of the self to his natural position of shelter in the service of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord. The practice of yoga reduces afflictions, difficulties, and it leads to samadhi. The five afflictions which disturb the equilibrium of consciousness are ignorance or lack of wisdom, that's avidya, asmitya, raga, dvesha, abhinavisheta, klesh. These are all the kleshas, all the disturbances. Ignorance, ego, false ego, attachment to pleasure, raga, dvesha, aversion to pain, fear of death, and clinging to life. Lack of true knowledge is the source of all pains and sorrows, whether dormant, attenuated, interrupted, or fully active. Mistaking the transient for the permanent, the impure for the pure, pain for pleasure, and that which is not for the self, not the self, for the self, all this is called lack of spiritual knowledge or avidya. So all these systems, the yoga system, the Ashtanga yoga system, Jnana yoga, and Bhakti yoga, they are all contiguous. They all touch each other. They're all consistent. But the top platform, the goal, as we'll even hear, Patanjali says, is bhakti, surrender to Krishna. Bhakti begins with surrender to Krishna. False egoism is the identification of the seer, the soul, with the instrumental power of seeing. That means basically with the body. Pleasure leads to desire and emotional attachment. This is a principle of yoga. That which you get pleasure from, even if it is in the mode of goodness, you get attached to that and you desire more of it and you get attached to it, which leads to the mode of passion. And passion leads to distress. And unhappiness leads to hatred. Self-preservation or attachment to life is the subtlest of all afflictions. It is found even in wise men, attached to keeping the body and soul together. But a devotee, that's why Mahaprabhu prayed, Janmani, Janmani Shre, Bhavadtad Bhakti Rahaiti Kiti. Let me take birth anywhere, it doesn't make any difference. But the attachment of a devotee is to his remembrance of Krishna and nothing else. So it's very, very technical, actually, about past lives. As long as the root of actions exist, it will give rise to a class of birth, span of life, and experience. As long as we have the false ego, which is the root of action. We want to act as independent of Krishna. It causes us to perpetual birth and death and birth and death. According to our good, bad, or mixed karma, the quality of our life, its span, and the nature of birth are experienced as being pleasant or painful. The wise man knows that owing to fluctuations, the qualities of nature, the gunas, the modes of nature, and deep impressions in the consciousness, even pleasant experiences are tinged with sorrow, and he keeps aloof from them. The wise person just doesn't get entangled in the material world because he knows that everything is sorrow. The pains which are yet to come can be and are to be avoided by complete detachment. So how, this is yoga. You can't involve yourself in anything to do with the material world. Subtle pleasure, gross pleasure, completely aloof. Because one cannot at all identify with the body. Then it talks of, he talks about sattva, rajas, and tamagun, and then how they affect the person who thinks he's the body. And then he explains that nature and intelligence exist solely to serve the seer's true purpose, which is liberation. Lack of spiritual understanding, avidya, is the cause of the false identification with the seer, of the seer with the seen. The destruction of ignorance through right knowledge breaks the link binding the seer to the seer, the seer to the seen. This is kaivalya, or emancipation. The ceaseless flow of discriminative knowledge in thought, word, and deed destroys ignorance, the source of pain. And then it talks about the different koshas, or the different sheaths surrounding the soul. And then he begins to describe. So this is just basic philosophy. Then he begins to describe the practices of sadhana. So first thing is you have to accept that you can't involve in any sense gratification, even subtle. Then he starts talking about yam niyam, asan, pranayam, pratyahara, dharan, dhyan, samadhyā, astoangani. So these are the eight limbs of, or angas of yoga. So here are the ahimsa, satya, asatya, brahmacharya, aparigraha, yama. Non-violence, truthfulness, abstention from stealing, continence, celibacy, and absence of greed for possessions beyond one's needs are the five pillars of yama, or the rules, what one must do. And these yamas are great, mighty, universal vows, unconditioned by place, time, and class. No matter where you are, the yogi has to follow these. Cleanliness, contentment, religious zeal, self-study, and surrender of the self to the supreme self are the niyams. Ultimately, this is what one must do. One must surrender. Ishwara pani dinanani. The ultimate regulation is that one must surrender himself to the Supreme Lord. Principles which run contrary to yama niyama to be counted with the knowledge of discrimination. With your intelligence, shouldn't do anything that runs contrary to this. Uncertain knowledge, giving rise to violence, whether done directly or indirectly, or condoned, is caused by greed, anger, or delusion, in mild, moderate, or intense degree as the result. It results in endless pain and ignorance. Through introspection comes the end of pain and ignorance. When nonviolence in speech, thought, and action is established, one's aggressive nature is relinquished, and others abandon hostility in one's presence. So on and on. When the sadhaka is firmly established in the practice of truth, his words become so potent that whatever he says comes to realization. When abstention from stealing is firmly established, precious jewels come. When the sadhaka is firmly established in celibacy, knowledge, vigor, valor, and energy flow to him. Brahmacharya patishtayam virya labdha. Knowledge of past and future lives unfold when one is free from greed for possessions. Cleanliness of body and mind develops disinterest in contact with others for sense gratification. So all these are automatically taken care of by the practice of bhakti yoga. When the body is cleansed, the mind purified, and the senses controlled, joyful awareness needed to realize the inner self also comes. From contentment and benevolence of consciousness comes supreme happiness. Self-discipline, tapa, burns away impurities and kindles the spark of divinity. Self-study leads towards the realization of God or communion with one's Ishtadev, one's desired deity. And finally, the one last one we'll read is Samadish Siddhi, the Ishvara Pranidharat. That surrender to God brings perfection in samadhi. So all the objects, the different strengths of meditation, dhyan, and then finally samadhi comes when one surrenders to Krishna. And then Krishna, as with Kadama Muni, he will come to such a devotee. So this process, to do it actually, practically and properly, takes thousands of years to cleanse the mind, cleanse the heart. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Navapanam Shraya Karaiva Chandrika Vataranam. Like the white lotus of our spiritual life, our good fortune blossoms. Anandam Bhudi Varadanam. The ever-increasing ocean of bliss is there. And then it is the life of all knowledge, because it is living knowledge. It is living what is knowledge, because it comes to the point of yoga, even comes to the point of surrender to Krishna. So what is the life of that knowledge? The life of that activity is devotion. Param vijayate si Krishna sankirtan. So it Sankirtan is so powerful that it is victorious in this world and even in Kali Yuga, which is so heavy, so difficult in Kali Yuga. Of course, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra was always there, but Kali Yuga brings so much distress that one can hold on tightly, just like if you put a rope in the middle of Hay Street Mall and say, hold on to this rope and we'll pull you out of difficulty, no one will hold on to it because everyone's too busy enjoying themselves. But if you put a rope like that in some of the places in the world where there is so much tumult and war and violence and killing and maiming, and there's so many of those places, shooting people, mutilating people, and you just tell people, hold on to this and we'll free you. People are in so much distress and anxiety that they'll hold on so tightly, get me out of here. So in that way, in Kali Yuga, we should hold on to Krishna's names and not let go even for a moment. And that is the key. So Jiva Goswami explains that although the holy names and the Mahamantra is there in other ages, in Kali Yuga people can hold on tightly because of the opulence of distress that is dominant in Kali Yuga. And therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his Uddala Aruna song that there is nothing to be gained in this world other than the holy names. That means holding on to them tightly and a taste for that. Okay. Thank you very much. Questions? Comments?
on television a few years ago from America, and they were saying that people's anxiety is caused by some sort of complications they had when they were born during their birth. And so they made it into a TV show, and what they were doing was they were hypnotizing these people, and they on the stage, and they somehow sort of retraced the whole birth experience. But what was funny is that these people were hypnotized, and they were sort of moaning and this and that. They were stuck in between two mattresses on the stage, and they were slowly like sort of making their way out of in between these
like
two
the
mattresses.
Womb.
Bed mattresses.
Yeah. They were trying to make believe it was like a womb.
Yeah.
And trying to get it. And they came out and they had no more anxiety and they were fully liberated. Great. And how much does it cost? $8,000 for a week. Just imagine how if these people actually could liberate others and free them from all anxiety, and they're charging so much money for it, how cruel they are. But they can't do those things, so how greedy they are, how bluffing they are. But just imagine, there's that wonderful story of Ramanujacharya, who was given mantra, and he wasn't supposed to repeat it to anyone, and it was so powerful that anyone who received this mantra would become liberated. So he immediately went out and went on a tower and started saying it loudly and begging everyone to chant it, because if it was so powerful, out of his compassion, he was giving it away freely. Past life regressions, that's really in, isn't it? Past and current life regressions, I say. Any other questions or comments? Oh, long time ago. You want to know the exact dates? Thousands of years ago. I don't know. Long time ago. Between 500 and 2000 BC, so they say. So that's 2000, more than 2000 years ago, almost 2500 years ago. So they say. In this book, I don't know, actually. Any other questions? You have a follow-up question to that?
Another question. You mentioned that in the previous ages, Mahamantra is about presence.
Is there?
How the sages used to chant or what?
But they did other practices. They either did meditation, or they did temple worship, sacrifices, and in Kali Yuga, it's Nam Sankirtan. So their methods of worship, even though the Mahamantra was there, because it is written in the Upanishads, etc., the Mahamantra is there, they didn't hold on to it. It always has potency, but they didn't hold on to it in the other way because they had time and they were peaceful and they were happy. So they practiced other methods. They would, no, not in the same way. No. They would practice the temple worship or sacrifices or meditation. The date of this book couldn't be right. I'm not saying that it's a Western given date. Yeah.
What's the title of that book?
I'll show it to you later. Anything else? Svadhyaya.
Not study, reflection.
Yeah.
So how would we see that in that era? Is it equivalent to the stage? Can you see that manifesting?
Yeah, one, there's introspection, which is the job of an introvert, and there's the what an extrovert is. An extrovert's consciousness is outward only. So that comes from the mode of passion. And in the mode of goodness, the more one is in the mode of goodness, he's thoughtful and reflective. And he especially knows himself as not the body, and he doesn't want to entangle in things of the body, of the mind, of the world. Okay. And also, the more advanced a devotee is, the more humble he is. Now, how could one become humble without being introspective? What does introspective mean? It means awareness, conscious of one's own self and precarious position and one's poor nature and qualities. So the advanced devotees are always so humble. That means that they're very painfully aware of their faults, and when they see themselves, they see only their faults. And when they see others, they are very respectful. So it seems to be a natural product of both advancement in the mode of goodness and also of humility, which come in Krishna consciousness. Okay? Any other questions or comments? Okay, it's 8 o'clock. So we'll hear next Wednesday, we'll begin hearing the prayers of Kadama, which are very sweet. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.